Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
On October 22nd, Supervisor Joel Anderson convened a forum on homelessness at Grossmont College. Panelists included El Cajon Councilman Phil Ortiz and Steve Goebel, El Cajon Police Chief Mike Moulton, and El Cajon City Manager Graham Mitchell. The forum was convened after tensions between the city and county over the county's homeless motel voucher program. Many of the homeless that the county placed in El Cajon motels through the voucher program were not from El Cajon, but the program had impacts on the city, including increased police and fire responses to complaints of crime, drug use, and even a fire. All sides agree that more help is needed for the homeless on our streets. Moderator Barry Jantz, former CEO of the Grossmont Healthcare District and a former La Mesa City Councilman, outlined the goals of the event.
Goals for today. We're looking for a positive dialogue between two local government agencies. They're all sitting here. With the result being possible solutions to collaborate further in addressing homelessness and the impacts of homelessness. That's goal number one. The second goal is so the public, so all of you, can be informed of the issues surrounding homelessness. And that includes programs that local governments have in place to assist the homeless. So that's obviously the County of San Diego and the City of El Cajon. Also, the public can be more informed of impacts resulting from homelessness in our communities and how they're being addressed, those impacts. And lastly, how concerned citizens can take action to improve programs and solutions.
After introducing each panelist, Jantz invited the City of El Cajon to discuss its actions and progress in helping the homeless.
Let's hear from the City of El Cajon, and this again, what you're doing to address homelessness. I know you're doing a lot, and maybe what you see as how the county can improve how you can address homelessness in the county. And by the way, it's not a debate, unless it needs to be, but it's not going to be, we're not planning on a debate. We're looking at a constructive forum today. I'm here to drive traffic. That's all I need to do. If it goes really well today, you can thank me. If it doesn't, you can blame the politicians. But we're gonna go to you for about 15 minutes, Graham. Okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for being here. Again, my name's Graham. I'm gonna turn the time over to Councilmember Ortiz and Goebel, and then I'll kind of talk about the meat of what the City of El Cajon has been doing in the realm of homelessness. But I just wanted to first plug the council members. In fact, and there's three council members that couldn't be here today, we'd have a Brown Act violation if we did. But one of the things that I'm most proud about our city council is these folks walk the talk. It's easy to sit on a dais and pontificate about solutions, but they are actually, each of them individually in their own way, involved in solutions. And you'll probably, hopefully they'll share some of what they're doing. If they don't, I will. But I'm gonna turn the time over to them to kind of give some introductory remarks, and then I'll kind of talk about what we're doing and maybe some of the challenges that the City of El Cajon sees.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. As Barry said, my name is Phil Ortiz. I'm an El Cajon City Councilman. Excuse me, I'm battling a hoarse voice from cheering for the Padres. I first want to start off by saying, well, thank you everyone for being here, because it shows that you care about your community. One of my residents told me just recently, it's so hard, we're so discouraged, you know, it doesn't seem like anything's getting better. We're here to show you that our programs are working, and if we give up on our community, then, you know, there's no hope. We need to keep hope in all of this. I want to also say, secondly, everyone here takes this homeless situation extremely seriously. I spend the majority of my mental energy and time not only fielding calls and emails, but trying to come up with solutions for homelessness in all of San Diego and really the entire region, California. I was homeless in college. And so my depth of knowledge and my care for people out on the street goes deeper than I think anyone has. I've had family members who are homeless, living out of storage facilities. I wasn't living out of a storage facility. I was couch surfing and living out of my truck, taking showers at the gym, burning bridges with my friends because I was sleeping too long on couches. So I know what it's like. Secondly, or last is what I'll talk about, is when we have these forums, we need to define who we're talking about and define our terms. So often we talk past each other when we're talking about homelessness. And so these terms that I'm going to throw out there are from experts who have been working with homeless for decades. The two types of homeless people we have are situationally homeless and chronic homeless. Situationally homeless, simply defined, someone who's down on their luck. They lost their job. A college student, you know, poor college student. Someone got kicked out of their apartment. Single mom, father left them. They need a hand up. Situationally homeless. The second type that we can broadly define is chronic homeless. Someone who's been on the street for 6 months or more, and I would say have some kind of addiction issue or mental health issue that's hindering them from lifting themselves up out of their place of distress. The city of El Cajon has a lot of programs, and there's a lot of help for situationally homeless. We have been successful with that. Reason being, it's inexpensive. It's relatively inexpensive to help these people. And Graham's going to go through this. Chronic homeless, people dealing with mental health and addiction issues, that is a very expensive process to help these people. We're talking, because you're not just dealing with their homelessness, their financial situation, or their housing situation. You're dealing with the trauma of their life. You're dealing with anxiety. You're dealing with depression. You're dealing with trauma. Addiction, that requires mental health professionals. That requires sometimes medication. That requires a lot of money. So a small city like El Cajon doesn't have the budget to erect a mental health facility with 24-hour care and doctors and psychiatrists and things like that. So that's why it's so important for us to define our terms. And the majority of the people that we see on the street, the visibly homeless, are chronic homeless. And so we need to make sure we're defining our terms. I'm not going to get into my resume and what I've done with regard to homelessness. I'll leave that to Steve because he's really a champion of it as well. But I want to make sure that everyone here up on this panel cares about this deeply. We're all taking this very seriously.
I'm going to stand if you don't mind, just so I can see some of you in the back. Phil's right. The city of El Cajon has been doing a lot of things. A friend of mine who used to work at the county would talk to his contact at the Union Tribune, how come you don't write about these good things that the county is doing? Saving money. And the reporter said, it's easy. We don't write about that because we expect you to. Which was very insightful. So what you're going to hear about some things from our city manager today are the successes. And they don't make the news because, rightly so, you expect us to. But now because you're here, you're going to hear the rest of the story as Paul Harvey used to say in his radio show. So thank you for coming and being part of this. This is a great informational session for you, and I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I'm gonna stand too, that way I can see everybody. So I forgot to mention that when I was the city manager of Lemon Grove, I started realizing I needed to get in better shape. And so I took two classes at Grossmont College, soccer classes. It was a little weird, a 40-year-old guy taking classes with 18-year-old kids, but it was fun, it got me in shape. So really quickly, if there's three messages that you can take away, is that I believe the city of El Cajon is perhaps doing more than any other city in the county of San Diego when it comes to dealing with homelessness. Number two, there is a lack of regional collaboration when it comes to homelessness. And the reality is that homeless individuals, although they go homeless typically where they most recently lived, it's one of the reasons we have so much homelessness in this area and not in, say, Coronado. You don't go homeless in Coronado, you go homeless in a place like El Cajon. They don't care where the boundary is. And so having regional collaboration is vital, and there's a lack of it, and I'll give some examples of how we're trying to combat that, but also some areas where we can get better at it. And then lastly is we as cities and the county of San Diego, if you're a government jurisdiction in the state of California and you're trying to help the homeless or combat the impacts of homelessness, you are literally fighting the battle with not one hand but both hands tied behind your back. The state laws that currently exist, county policies when it comes to prisons and who can go into county jail is pretty restrictive. And so there was a time where we used the criminal justice program or system to house homeless. That's a really expensive way to house homeless and very ineffective. However, just kicking a whole bunch of people out on the street and then saying, well, we hope you all figure it out. That's probably also a really ineffective and inefficient way to deal with it. So we need to have a statewide collaborative conversation about how to deal with the criminal justice aspect of homelessness too. I'm handing out this piece of paper here. If you have this, this is kind of a cheat sheet of what we are doing on homelessness. We have a website that has all the same information as well. But we have offered a lot of programs, about a dozen programs that are really focused on helping individuals find permanent housing. That's our number one goal. It is not to warehouse folks. It is not to accommodate a homeless lifestyle. It's really to steer people into permanent housing, because we know that's, in the end, the most cost-effective and best solution for society. We have piloted a program with the Salvation Army. Salvation Army has led them here. And that program now is offered countywide. And it is extremely inexpensive way to get people back into supportive housing with their family members or friends. We've partnered with Once Crisis House and now with Home Start. And through that process, we've offered housing navigation. In fact, I think we're the third city and county to offer housing navigation after San Diego and Encinitas. We are the first city, and now so far the only city in the county, that has changed zoning to allow for tiny cabins or emergency cabins to house homeless. And so it's a zoning tool that we did. Mr. Goble was out for how many weekends? At least 3 months with a hammer in the hot sun this summer building these homes. And first week of November, we'll be accepting folks. So we're hoping that we've been trying to look at what we can do, not only to help us with our homeless issue, but also to import, or I should say export, to other cities throughout the region. I think these are some great examples. Over the last 2.5 years, we have spent almost $3 million on homeless solutions. We have found permanent housing, not warehousing, but permanent housing for 737 individuals. We have found temporary shelter for almost 3,000 individuals. We have decreased the number of unsheltered homeless, which is, in my mind, the folks sleeping on the street, the group that we should be focusing on. Between the point time count 2020 and 2022, we've actually reduced that number by 40%. And that's a big deal. We're getting people off the street and into housing. If you look at the number, again, the point time count, the number of the sheltered homeless per capita, we exceeded by, I think, like 10, no, 8 times more than the next biggest city, which is the city of San Diego. So we are doing our part. Can we do more? Absolutely. Do we need more suggestions? Absolutely. When we get lots of brains together like this, that's when solutions can come about, because we can start bouncing ideas and innovation off of each other. But I'm really proud of the work that we have done when it comes to finding permanent solutions for those that are on the streets of El Cajon. Let me talk about some collaboration. The city manager of Lemon Grove and I were at a city manager conference a few years ago, and we heard an example of 10 cities in North Orange County coming together and developing a memorandum of understanding where they would say, we're going to build 2 shelters amongst the 10 cities, and we're going to figure out how to fund those with all 10 cities. We're going to have this agreement that will help facilitate that. So that's Lydia Romero and I. We went back to our colleagues in La Mesa and Santee. We got them on board. We started drafting it. We brought the county into the conversation. They're part of this memorandum of understanding. So we have this document that says we are committed to collaborate. So now we just need a project to collaborate with. The city of El Cajon recently applied for a grant to hopefully buy property. We have it picked out. We can't buy it, so we know we get the money, so that property may fall out of an agreement, but we're trying to secure that property, and if we can get that, we'll be the first shelter in East County that can be funded by all the parties of this MOU, which is a really cool step in the right direction. Now let me talk about where we're not doing well when it comes to collaboration. The Regional Task Force on Homelessness recently came out with this plan that they want all 18 cities to adopt. This is a plan that cities are to implement. I learned about this by a press release or seeing it on the news. So I reached out to all the other 17 city managers in the county and said, maybe I just missed an email, did I miss a meeting, was I not invited? No one had heard about this. And that's the kind of collaboration we need. We gotta talk more with each other. Yeah. We're, like Mr. Ortiz said, we're talking past each other all the time. And it's insane that we, there's only 18 cities in this county, and the county of San Diego, we should be talking together more than we are. But we're not. We're talking at each other and not with each other. And I think we need to start coming together and doing that. City of El Cajon, we can influence our own sphere. And so that's what we're doing with our own East County cities. But we're hoping that hopefully the county can take a role. We hope that the regional task force can repent of their sins and have a better dialogue with the cities that they are supposed to serve.
Yes.
And we'll be part of that solution. Now let me just talk about a couple things where we struggle. If you look at a chart of homelessness across the United States per state, you'll notice that every large state, their homeless populations have either decreased or have plateaued over the last 6, 7, 8 years. Except for one state. Guess what state?
California,
exactly right. And it's interesting that you can see these spikes in homelessness as Proposition 47, which pushed people out onto the streets, as Prop 57 was passed by the voters, which decriminalized a lot of felonies, and as counties, because of COVID, stopped intaking people that were breaking the law. It's interesting that these spikes all correlate with those points in time. And so we as a city, we get calls all day long. Why can't the police chief get a backbone and go get rid of these people? I don't know what that means, to get rid of these people. There's no way to get rid of these people. It would be improper, unethical, and illegal to put them on a bus and ship them to Yuma. Although that is the number one request that we get. We can't do that. And so until some of those laws change, and those laws will only change as we talk as a community, we're gonna be, like I said, working with both hands tied behind our back. And so we need some help legislatively at the state level and at the county level so we can start booking people that repeatedly break the law that we can do nothing about. So with that, that's where we're at as a city. We'll be here to talk about more about what we're doing, and we'd love to hear your questions.
Thanks, City of El Cajon. And before the supervisor goes, I saw Bonnie. I didn't get you. You're one on my list. Bonnie Baranoff, who runs the East County Homeless Task Force, not to be confused with the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, which he just said needs to repent. East County Homeless Task Force is an effort that was actually started through the East County Chamber that's now largely operating kind of independently, I guess, is safe to say it. But Bonnie, I wanted to point you out. Raise your hand. In case anybody wants to talk to her at some point after about getting involved in that effort.
Okay.
Thanks for being here. Supervisor Anderson.
Thank you. I'm going to stand up too so you can see me. First of all, I want to thank El Cajon. I've lived in East County for the last 35 years, and I've seen firsthand the great work they've done. You've bared the burden like no other city in San Diego County. And I had said when I was running for office, by the way, I was bold enough to put fix homelessness on my campaign sign, so I'm a little committed to it. But I want to live like this, and I don't think we should live like this, and I don't think that anybody should live the way they are. And I've said on more than one occasion publicly that for far too long, El Cajon's gone it alone for too long, and they need better partners, and I want the county to be a better partner. And I also was a huge advocate of the MOU. In fact, we have a resource board here with all the cities, their letters, and the county's MOU that everybody signed on to. If you want to see a copy of it, it's over there. It's item number 2. I have a little cheat sheet of all the different items. Because I thought, you know, it's really important that we talk about what's real and we're going to work together. And some of the things that the county's doing, I'm very excited about. Prior to me being elected, we didn't have any shelters whatsoever in the unincorporated. My predecessor didn't believe we had a homeless issue, and that's okay. She did a lot of really great things, and things have gotten really bad in the last few years. If you were to go back 20 years ago, homelessness was nowhere close to our number one issue. But that's all changed. So let me just walk through some of the things that I'm working on. You all are probably familiar with Magnolia Street. I got elected and sworn in January of last year, and I started on that in February. And it's not easy to move people out. 102 or 104 of those applicants we offered hotel vouchers to. That you heard Graham speak to this, but there's a court decision called the Boese decision. And what it says is hopelessness is not a crime. And that if you have no place to go, you're allowed to sleep on the streets. But if you do have a place to go, then the police chief can go after people who sleep on the streets who refuse to get help. And so we have to create those shelters in order to enforce the law. And we want to create those shelters, right? Why would we want anybody to live on the street that way? We want to give them a path to a better life. But if people choose to take over our parks, to take over our streets, to take over what we paid for so our kids and grandkids can participate and use, and now are being denied access, well, that's not right either. Everyone has to meet halfway to help each other. And so while we're moving forward with shelters, I'm trying to put a shelter in every community in my district so that we can help the most amount of people that want help. At the same time, I'm not going to allow people to commandeer and take over all the swing sets in my district. So having said that, we used Diane Jacob and Jim Desmond created a voucher program for us, I believe it was 2018. We have a copy of the board letter that when it was designed. And the idea was to, while we're trying to build shelters, we would give them temporary housing that would allow them, allow us to enforce the law, but allow them wraparound services with a caseworker to find permanent housing. Now, you all should have had a pamphlet. It's a fact sheet on that voucher program. And I think it's important. It answers a lot of questions. But essentially, a year ago, we had 111 people in that program. Today, we have 121. And by the way, the number changes every day, right? We're offering vouchers. Some people leave, some people go, stay. And so that number's a little bit fluid. But we've been pretty stable right around that number this whole time. Having said that, 30% of the people that we put into that system in the last year are in permanent housing today. 20% were kicked out of the program because they violated the rules. You see, they have to sign a contract in order to get into the system. They have to attempt to become permanently not homeless. So one of the things, we're not doing Q&A, but I'm gonna be here all night. I'll stay and talk to everybody, and later there'll be Q&A. So, but the bottom line though is, without that tool, we have no ability to move people out of Magnolia. Now it took almost 9 months of moving those people out, having outreach every day, and 102 of those folks went into the voucher system. So I think it's important to know that. The second thing is the voucher system does not allow drug use, does not allow illegal activities. They have to stay within the rules of the hotel. If the hotel says, hey, we don't want you here, they get kicked out. We can't force anybody to do anything. We can only offer them opportunity. It's the same with the hotels. No hotel is forced into the system. We pay $145 a night. And if you want to rent to us, you may rent to us, but you don't have to. It's entirely up to you. But that's a very, very strong tool as we attempt and continue to build shelters. I had a community coffee about 4 months ago in Lakeside to talk about this. And gosh, I think it was 4 hours of people being educated on the issue. They didn't understand. We know at the point in time, I was in the state legislature, I served you there. I was never home available to do the point in time count. This last year I was able to. It was the first time we did it in 2 years. And I was knocking on tents at 3 a.m. asking people how they got to be homeless and how, you know, what services do they need. I wanted to see firsthand so I could best serve them. And Councilman Ortiz said it best. There's a wide variety. It's not one stop for these folks. I ran into a couple. They had been homeless for a couple of weeks. They came out here for a job. They got out here and there was no job. And they'd spent all their money hoping that they would get the job, you know, hovering for the job. And they said, we just want to get home. Well, the county has programs and so does the city. If somebody wants to go home and there's somebody in another city who says they will give them a place to stay, That's the key. We're not just shipping people out, but we're returning loved ones home to their original home. You know, we have a lot of runaway kids that come out here, and they get out here and they realize, oh my gosh, maybe my parents weren't so bad. And we contact those parents. And I know in the city of El Cajon, I think, Steve, I heard you speak about this a year ago, of how successful that program is. So that's a great niche. And we were able to get those, within a week, we were able to ship those people home. But the next guy was there, he had been there for over 19 years. All his friends lived in that encampment. He was not going to leave. We had to move him with all his friends because that's his community. And when we set up these shelters, we're setting them up with security so that people can sleep at night knowing that they're not going to be robbed. We're setting up with wraparound services. Nothing the county doesn't involve caseworker and wraparound services for permanent change. So I wanted to make sure you knew that we were moving forward with it, but you know, to site a shelter takes almost 2 years to site it and build it. It takes a lot of time to do that because you have to jump through all the environmental hurdles, all the other hurdles that you would if you were to build anything else. But we're exploring all of it, and I'm reaching out. But I've been on the job, this is now approaching my second year. I have to learn my job. This is not an easy job to do. It's easy to get elected, it's hard to govern. And so we also are looking at the mental health aspects. We are moving forward, and I want to make sure I say this right, with a crisis stabilization unit in El Cajon. For the first time ever in East County, if you have a loved one who is having an episode, you'll have a place that's open 724 that you can take them to stabilize them. Or if the person is having an episode of any type, we'll be able to take the homeless and stabilize them. Law enforcement, instead of picking up people on a 5150, which is, I don't know the correct term, but a crazy call.
Danger yourself, right?
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's a much better definition than crazy call. But the bottom line, though, is instead of going over to Grossmont in the emergency room and losing an officer for 4 hours, 6 hours, while they are inadequately trying to address mental health, when they're really about physical health, we will now have a facility that the officer will be able to take that person there, or a family member, will stabilize them, and they'll be able to go home within 24 hours. We're also working with Edgemore over in CMT, but this is, you know, this stuff takes time to build, and it's not gonna be online immediately, but we're adding additional mental health beds at Edgemore with the intention of some of these folks need more permanent care than 24 hours. And right now, we don't have the capacity to address that, but we're gonna add the capacity, and we're negotiating and working with the city of CMT. One of the things that we did is we recognized that there are a lot of people who have jobs and are working and have kids and they live in their car. We heard from Councilman Ortiz that he was couch surfing and he could have been one of those people that was living in their car, and yet they're parking on our streets, and at 3 a.m. when their 3-year-old has to go to the bathroom, where are they gonna go? There's nothing open, there's nothing for them. But we took that Magnolia site, we turned it into a safe parking. So now there's a bathroom, there's a shower, we're meeting their needs. These people have jobs, they just can't afford to live here. And they're trying to raise the money to find permanent housing, and we're working with them with wraparound services. We're also, their kids are going to school in the Cajon Valley schools. One of the things that most people don't realize is in East County, we didn't have a big homeless issue after this last point in contact that we went through. If you add North County and South Bay together, we have more homeless in East County than the two of them combined. The only area that has more homelessness is in the city of San Diego. So we've got to get smart about how we do this. And that's why, you know, on Magnolia, part of it's in the county of San Diego and part of it's in the city. And for far too long, when the city would try to clean it up, they'd take two steps to the left and they were in the county. And when the sheriffs came out, we have a great care unit. They go out and do outreach all the time and they don't get the credit that they deserve. Thank you for your hard work in the county for the care unit. Uses them all the time, and they've had a profound positive impact out there. But when we'd send our care unit to take two steps into the city to avoid it, that MOU allows us to work together. Hopefully, then the sheriffs and the police chief are all working together to not push them down the street, but get them off the street. Because they shouldn't have to live like that, but every one of those businesses, they provide jobs that create the wealth that allow people to feed their families. It's not fair to them either. So there has to be a balance, but the only way we're gonna get to that balance is by working together. That's why I called the meeting today, because I don't wanna negotiate through press conferences. I wanna do things that have affecting change for the better. I'm gonna get termed out, and I'm still gonna live in this community, and I'm not gonna live like this, and you shouldn't either. Thank you.
You do recall we started a little bit late. I think it was about, you know, maybe 7 or 10 minutes late. So, I mean, if everybody's in agreement, depending on how it goes and how much, you know, I understand you're staying, but we'll probably run the formal program till about 3:40 or so, just so we can get it on. So now we want to get into some discussion. And I had some questions to prompt discussion. I actually don't know if I'm going to need those. I mean, my first question was actually, and Graham, I think you really touched on this one, because you just said your hands are tied, basically. You know, my question was way more, you know, to what extent do federal and state laws and court actions impact local government's ability to take action to address homelessness? Okay, you know, so, do we want to get into that a little bit more? Does the public need to understand a little bit more to what extent? You know, and so the bottom line question is, in other words, are higher levels of government having an impact on local control? That's really the question. So who wants to start with that? And this can be for the city or the county.
So I'll touch on this briefly. So I think it's important that you have, I could talk about this for 2 hours, and I'll talk briefly about Prop 47, 57, and AB 109. I could talk about each one of those for half an hour, so please do some research on them. Prop 57, they were passed by the voters overwhelmingly. Prop 47 reduced a lot of felonies to misdemeanors. It was called the Safe Schools and Neighborhood Act. But as voters, when we see that on our ballot, who doesn't want safe schools and neighborhoods? So it's passed. And again, so I'll try to condense this. I'll try to distill this down into a couple of minutes. The chronic homeless that we're seeing on the street that are committing crimes, they used to be in and out of custody. They used to get arrested. They'd spend 3 months in jail. They'd be out of jail for 3 months. They'd get arrested. They'd be in jail for 6 months. They'd get out. They're just out now. They're not in. And to kind of wrap it up and bring it home, somebody could walk through that door right now using narcotics, actively using narcotics. They could be smoking methamphetamine, cocaine, fentanyl. Walk up to any one of you in the audience and punch you in the face, and then come and steal this microphone. And I cannot put that person in jail. They'll get a ticket. So that kind of tells you what we're dealing with on the criminal justice side.
A friend of mine is a correctional officer at Donovan State Prison. I asked her yesterday, I said, so how full is Donovan State Prison? You might remember several years ago, a federal judge said that the California prisons have to lower their occupation because they were too full. And some of those people got put out on the street. She said, and this is her comment, so this isn't a verified or vetted, but it's a point of reference. She said, we're 70% full, I would guess. So if they're 70% full and they're not accepting new people, that means county jails can't send people to state prison. And during COVID, county jails had to reduce their population, according to the sheriff, from 5,600 to 3,400. So that means fewer people actually got booked into jail during COVID. Well, now, I don't know if that's been lifted yet as a policy, but now you have these lower level offenders not even getting into jail because they don't have space to send them to prison because there's still space in the prison. So you've got this kind of, this upside down, backwards thing where you have lawbreakers who aren't going to jail, where in some cases, in the voucher system, we have people with felony warrants out for their arrest. And these people have an arrest warrant. We need to arrest them and put them in the jail. They're felons. Living across the street from me was a state parolee at large wanted for a parole violation. And he was arrested. I don't know where he went. It's this dynamic between county jail and state prison and the occupancy. Arresting homeless people and taking them to jail just isn't going to happen because they're going to be released from jail if they even get booked into jail. because that's the lowest level of offense. And that's one of the frustrations that we have as a city and a police department is it's just not working to arrest people and to take them to jail because they won't stay in jail. And that's a frustration. The best we can do, and I think it's right, is to keep them moving along and not set up camp. Because if they set up camp, we've seen what's happened with Magnolia. If they're allowed to stay too long, they set up a camp and then all sorts of bad things can happen. So I thank the supervisor for clearing the camp because that helped a lot. But this is what's happening to us with the state prison, county jail, lower level offender is just not getting into jail, and that's kind of where we're handcuffed. AB 47 was felonies and misdemeanors. AB 57 was a reclassification of serious crimes to lesser crimes. AB 109 was a reduced time in prison or more credit for those kind of things. And all those things together, we just can't send people to jail like we used to for crimes, for drug possession. I watched the guy at Home Depot walk in and grab the Milwaukee tools and walk out the emergency room door with the door sounding the alarm. And nobody does anything because he knows if it's under $950, it's a misdemeanor ticket. That's crazy in our world. It's a misdemeanor ticket. And he goes in and steals that stuff. I watched him walk out, and nobody wants the liability of confronting this guy because you don't know if he's on drugs, if he has a weapon. So you know what? It's a cost of doing business for Home Depot, which is very sad because it means higher prices for the rest of us. So I'm trying to explain some of the constraints that we have.
Just go down the line if you want. We can go back and forth. We're not putting time restraints on anybody within reason.
He said that right before I spoke. I agree with everything that our chief and Councilmember Gold said, and I want to stress, we are not talking about all homeless with regard to arresting. We're talking about the criminal element within the homeless population. There is, I think, a small glimmer of hope with Care Court, and I'll briefly touch on that because I think it was just passed in this last session in the state legislature. It basically summed up, says, if there can be a referral by a social worker or a family member or a medical professional or a law enforcement professional that puts a person who is not mentally well in front of a Care Court judge, so to speak, to gauge this person's mental capacity. I mean, we've all seen videos, I don't know if everyone's seen videos, but I've seen videos of people, there's this one, it's in LA County, this poor man, he's completely nude, and he's running headfirst into cars. We need to be able to do something about that. Yeah. And this Care Court allows us to be able to do something about it. Say, this person is not mentally well, they cannot be out on the street, their psychosis is so deep that they're hurting themselves. And this is what Supervisor Anderson was talking about with 5150 calls. I'm of the belief, if you have multiple 5150 calls, which is a danger to yourself or others, within 6 months, 3 months, then you need some help, and it needs to be forced. So you either go get treatment or you go to jail. It's one of the two. But these concepts are not new. They do it in New Jersey, and you see the testimonies of these people who were forced into care, and they rehabbed and they got better, and they're just talking to the camera. I would have been dead. I would have died. I would have killed someone, or I would have died. So it's not a new concept, but our state legislatures, representatives, need to catch up with the crisis that we're seeing here. And this Care Court, I think, I don't know if we've examined it and how that even would work, but I think it's a glimmer of hope in saying we can forcefully put these people to give them help. I don't know if anyone wants to.
Phil, I appreciate you bringing up the Care Court. When they were proposing it, we sent a letter of support, and I actually sent a letter out to all my communities. And if you're on my newsletter, you will have gotten a copy of it asking you to sign on to my letter. This is a fundamentally huge issue for us in how we address people. We have a person downtown that likes to sleep on the trolley line, and the city of San Diego is complaining bitterly about it because they have to keep sending people out, and there's nothing they can do. We've got to have the tools in the toolbox. Now look, I'm for civil liberty, and I don't want to give anything up, But when a person fails to take care of themselves, we have to have the tools to make sure they don't just injure themselves but take other people with them. Having said that, you know, I think that there's been so much spoken about the county's voucher system. I want to address just a couple quick things with it. First of all, we screen for warrants. We don't put anybody in that has a warrant. So of all the people that had warrants, they were either out of our system or they were in another voucher system. We are not the only voucher system being accepted in the city of El Cajon. There are others, and I can't speak, although we do have a handout that lists others with what their program requirements are. We have a caseworker, and we have wraparound services, and we screen those folks. Now, the city had some issues, like we don't notify the city when we send people there. Some of it is we didn't because we can't give the name. But I went back to staff and said, well, why can't we just say we're sending somebody? I mean, let's not let the law be an excuse for not being good neighbors. So you're going to be getting that moving forward. Where we can work together, where we can make your job easier, I want to make it easier. We're not going to solve. This is a mountain of a problem. And no group alone is going to be able to solve it. So I want to make sure that people knew that we are screening for that. Having said that it is so difficult, one, with environmental law to set up shelters, two, with the crazy criminal laws that they're doing. And look, when they pass that, they have the best intentions. Unfortunately, they can't anticipate the ripple effect of what they do. We didn't want to be filling our jails with people that steal a loaf of bread. And now we have people, you can see on YouTube, going through Walmart with a county of there, making sure they're just under 950. And they have their kids grabbing all the stuff, and they're calculating it, and they know that nothing will be enforced. But you can't put that as an excuse not to do our jobs. We have to overcome these issues, not succumb to them. Yeah, I get it's hard. In the Boise decision, we have to have a place to send somebody in order to enforce the law. Okay, let's create those places, and let's keep doing our job, because you shouldn't live like this, nor should they. Now, I will tell you, I was over at Magnolia, and Undersheriff Kelly Martinez has just been a gem to work with. She's really educated me, and I don't have a police chief that is as good as our police chief here in El Cajon. However, the undersheriff, Phil, because you know our sheriff stepped down, so she was filling in for him. And I said, all these businesses have videos, and they have videos of people having crazy sex in the middle of Magnolia, and crimes, people being robbed. And I said, can you use that to prosecute? She said, no, the law says I have to witness it personally.
Crazy.
To what end? Now, I'm just gonna ask you, if you were out there, just rogue, doing something sexual, do you think that you'd end up on a pedophile list?
Yes.
Of course you would. Of course you would. There should be two standards of justice. There should be one standard of justice for all of us.
Yes.
And so what we have to do is, they're giving us a path. The path is uphill, but it's still a path. And I think having a meeting like this where we can work together and we are being transparent and telling you what we're doing so you can measure whether we're effective or not is crucial to our success.
The two justice system goes all the way up to Washington.
Amen.
Sure. Does anybody else want to address the global question of hands being tied by feds and state? I mean, I think you got the message. When I go on Next Door Neighborhood, I'll sigh when I go on Next Door Neighborhood. But I mean, you know, I mean, the folks on Next Door Neighborhood are just, they think all of these problems can just be addressed and no one's even trying to do anything. You know, but unfortunately, I think the folks that show up to an event like this today are probably, you know, not the type. You may be commenting on Next Door Neighborhood, but you know, we're trying to inform people. You need to be ambassadors in your community when it comes to misperceptions about what we can and can't do. And I think that's an important part of this discussion.
I think it's important to know, when I became supervisor, we reach out to all the mayors in my district and all the city managers, and we have meetings as important stuff that's coming before the Board of Supes because it impacts all of you. And we've had great participation with the cities working with me. But we gotta work as a team in East County. Nobody cares more about East County than us. So, but I wanted to make sure you knew that we were communicating.
Yay.
All right, well, we hope today is the beginning of more communications too. So Steve, go ahead. I do want to make sure we start getting into ideas people have to better collaborate between the county and the city, because that's, you know, part of our goal too, right?
I do have ideas.
Good.
That'd be great. I think you would ask us to come up with ideas. I'll tell you one idea that I'm hearing is, I think it would be great if the county and the city manager from each of the 18 cities were a committee to talk about homelessness. I don't know if it exists today. I heard about the Regional Task Force for Homelessness. I attended it. I'm aware that there's service agencies and helpers and things, but we're talking about the city managers from each city plus representatives of the county. I think that would be helpful. I think that should be discussed as an option. The screening going on in the motels, I think that is great. Another ask I would have as part of that program is, we don't know what happens where they go when they fall out of the program. And I've talked to some motel owners, where do these people go when they fall out of the program? We know that the contract requires the contractor to record the place, date, and time where this person got picked up, but there is no part of the contract that I can find, including the Sixth Amendment, that says what happens when they fall out of the program. Do they need to be returned to the community from which they came? Because I can tell, we know not all of these people are inside of El Cajon. Some are. But those that aren't, can we return them to the community from which they came? Because we carry a heavy burden by ourselves quite a bit. We know already we bring in people from other cities into some of the shelters we have. That's the compassion part of us. But you, the people, are seeing, where's the correction part for those that choose not to go in the shelter and they fall out of this program? Are they staying on the streets of El Cajon? Where are they going? So one of my asks is, can we make sure that once you come into that program, if you fall out of the program, you must be returned to the community from which you came? I think the people of El Cajon would like that. Supervisor Anderson has already picked up the torch about these tiny homes with Supervisor Vargas. They've agreed to move forward on this. Grant mentioned it earlier, it's 6 tiny homes on the property of Meridian Baptist Church. I did spend some time helping build those because they're beautiful cabins. They're 12 by 12, they have electricity and heater. They're 8 by 12 sleeping area with a bunk. Electricity for a computer, cell phone. There's a cabin there where Homestar comes into the cabin and provides services on site because they know where the people are. This is a great model that could be replicated in hundreds of places across the county. And Supervisor Anderson has said, let's find some sites where we could do this. So I appreciate that. The Care Court, one of my concerns is that the motels would be used as a transitional housing for the Care Court. And we need to make sure, look, all of us would say, in a perfect world, if the voucher recipients didn't need a call for police, if they went through the program and 100% of them got into permanent housing, we would all say, that's great. Yes. That's a working program. Yes. But the part that doesn't work, the 70% that don't go through the program, what are we going to do? Where are we going to address that? Return to the pickup point is where I'm seeing. So
we're up against all odds. So if we're looking for 100%, we're always going to be disappointed. But the fact is, they signed a contract and said, I wanted to change my life. So we have to give them every opportunity and take them at the words. I'll say another part to crime aspect. Are there criminals among the homeless? Of course. But if I was a criminal and I wanted to prey on somebody, I would prey on the weakest members of society because they can't fight back. So when you go into a homeless encampment, of course there's going to be some criminal element because they want to prey on the homeless. And they are homeless. So I just want to make sure that when we're thinking about this, we're thinking about all the spokes on the wheel, that they all lead to this hub, and we have to provide something for everybody. If we take the voucher system away until we get those shelters built, I can do nothing for Magnolia or Graves. We shut down Graves. We got a call. There were 5 people there. We got out there right away.
Right now, El Cajon Ford reached out to us because behind their facility, they have some, but we're checking to see if it's county land. I believe it's going to be Caltrans. That's the other thing. The county can only enforce in the county. The city can only enforce in the city. And the state has to enforce on Caltrans land. But we're communicating about it. Councilmember Mitchell had reached out to me and said, hey, can you help us on 2nd Street? And I forgot what the cross street was. And we looked into it, and I said, that's Caltrans, it's not us. But then I told her, yeah, I got this other issue, and let's talk about that. Because if it's city property, you know, I'm going to need your help. You know, this is all really difficult. It's not easy. It's not light switch. You just turn on, turn it off. It's very, very complicated. And what seems straightforward, most of the time, you label. You know, you all working hard, and you're doing a great job, and I want to be a better partner. But it was a little shocking when Bonta, our attorney general, sent you all a letter because they believed that you were violating the law.
That's terrible.
And so that's what we're up against. We've got the state watching us, and we better be dotting our I's and crossing our T's if we want to move forward to solve this in a meaningful way. And my personal commitment is to you all, because you know, I'm always the greatest champion of alcohol. No state is bare the front of this issue greater than you have. And I was out there at the grand opening of the mini homes, and people think, well, it's just a mini home. I'm sure you're familiar with the story of the starfish, right? A young boy's 1,000 starfish on the beach, and he's throwing them in one at a time. An old man comes up to him and says, hey, kid, there's 10,000 of these. How in the heck are you going to change anything? And he picks up a starfish, he throws it in the water, and goes, that one liked it. You know what? Yeah, those 9 homes are for pregnant women. We're getting them off the street. We're creating a community where their children are in the future. We got to be thinking about how the message we're going to send to our kids and the society we want to be part of. And at the same time, we have every right to expect the homeless to work with us, not against us. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Grant, and then we want to try. You know, you may want to respond, but at the same time, we want to make sure we're focused on how we can work together, right? So if ideas haven't come up, we're going to do that.
Well, I do have an idea. How come? I'll do it really fast.
Do it really fast.
There's 4 opinions in mind. So I'll get you a little extra time at the end. So one of the things that I had suggested, and I'd like to see you look at it, is we have special districts for beautifying areas and business areas. Why don't you come up with an ordinance that creates a special district for the hotels that take vouchers and we pay $145 per room with the voucher. Charge them $20 or $10 per room. We have 121 vouchers in the city right now. That'd be $1,000 a day or more. That would pay for an officer to be on call for the 14 calls you had last month to claim your breast freeze. You would have somebody who would be giant on the spot to address those issues so that it isn't costing the city money, and the hotels would still have the opportunity, and I'd still have the ability, you know, to turn around. And by the way, when you go to the homeless,
then it's going
to
be quick.
I am. This is fast for me. So when you go to the people and you offer them a voucher, they can choose where they go. If they say, well, we don't want to go there, these hotel boxes, the person knows they're going to El Cajon. We have 18 hotels that participate in our voucher system. We have one in Escondido. We have several around. They could say, we want to go to Escondido, and then they would be placed in El Cajon. The reason why they're coming to El Cajon is they identify as El Cajon as being their home. That's why it is. So if I'm living on the cusp of Greenfield, outside of the city limits, and I say, I want to go to El Cajon, I don't want to go to Chula Vista, what are we supposed to do? Say, no, you can't do that. We are working with only a carrot. There is no stick in this process, and you all know that. So thank you.
Grant, I know you want to respond to that. We want to quickly move to some Q&A from the audience, because we're going to be running over. An elected official walked in that I saw, Andrew Hayes, who's on the Lakeside Union School District Board. thanks for stopping by. He also works for Senator Brian Jones. The reason I bring that up is because as we sit here and beat up the state, you know, maybe someone may ask, well, why didn't you invite the state to the table?
But,
you
know,
yeah. Well, no, we won't do that. But, you know, my guess is
I'm just going to speak, without asking Andrew or Senator Brian Jones. My guess is the frustrations you hear about hands being tied, and some of that coming from the state. My guess is the state senator would agree with those frustrations. So, Graham.
I agree. We actually are working with some folks in Sacramento to look at some laws at the state level that would allow us to apply some fees towards homeless voucher and motel rooms, so we can give them funding. But I thought it's important for the public to recognize the data, and I think data is important. And I know that the county put out some data during the whole initial debacle, I'll call it that, about 64% from the city of El Cajon. And I don't know where that data came from, but county staff and I have been in conversation, and I received an email on October 12th. It was a list of everybody that was currently in a voucher program in El Cajon on October 10th. So this is pretty recent data. And one of the questions was asked, where were you most living on the street? There was 98 people that were in the voucher program. I'll just tell you where they're coming from. One was from Escondido, two from Santee, one from Mexico, one from Bonita, one from the city of El Cajon, 94 from unincorporated San Diego County. That includes, a lot of that is folks that work in the North Magnolia encampment, right? So that's almost El Cajon. But my concern is that there were 16 from Lakeside, but 23 from Spring Valley, which is not even in the Supervisor Anderson's district. So another supervisor is dumping folks in his own district, and that's a concern to me. Lemon Grove and La Mesa both have motels that could help keep the Spring Valley folks. So that's our concern. Our concern has always been not the voucher program itself, because we know it works, we use it, but it's just sort of this unfairness of dumping or highly concentrating folks, which we also think is a violation of state law and federal law as well, of concentrating people in areas. And so we're working actually on our own complaint with the state of California about that. So I think numbers are important. I don't want to get back and forth in numbers, and I don't know where the supervisor got his numbers from, but this is numbers straight from county staff.
Based on some of the conversation I heard today, I got an idea. An idea of maybe working better together is moving forward. When you're going back and forth with that data, let's pin down which voucher program it is.
That was county Equus.
Okay. So anyway, I think maybe what I'd say is, outside of a public forum like this, is regular meetings, staff, electeds, going forward about, there's obviously a difference of opinion here. So where is it coming? Okay.
A question and answer period followed, which we don't have time to air on our show today. Questions were submitted in writing and read aloud at the forum, and the panelists stayed late to answer every single question, even at risk of being late for that Padres playoff game. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.